I'm VOA's Jeff Custer with this worldwide news update. U.S. President Joe Biden is in Rio de Janeiro for his final Group of 20, or G20, Summit of Industrialized Nations this week. The meeting, observers believe, is unlikely to produce a meaningful statement on the world's biggest issues due to an unsettled geopolitical landscape. VOA's Richard Green has more.
The meeting in Rio de Janeiro Monday and Tuesday is overshadowed by two major wars and Donald Trump's election victory. Heightened global tensions and uncertainty about an incoming Trump administration have tempered any expectations for a strongly worded statement addressing the wars in the Middle East and between Russia and Ukraine. Experts instead anticipate a final document focused on social issues like the eradication of poverty, one of Brazil's priorities, even if it aims to include at least a mention of the ongoing wars. Richard Green, VOA News.
U.S. President-elect Donald Trump has named a senior Republican on the Federal Communications Commission, Brendan Carr, as the new chairman of the agency. AP correspondent Donna Warder reports.
President-elect Donald Trump has named Brendan Carr to head the Federal Communications Commission. Carr is the senior Republican of the agency and has been confirmed by the Senate three times. He was nominated by both Trump and Joe Biden to the commission. The FCC is an independent agency overseen by Congress. Trump has suggested that he wants to bring the FCC under tighter White House control. He wants to use the agency in part to punish TV networks that cover him in a way he doesn't like. Carr wrote a section devoted to the FCC in Project 2025, the sweeping blueprint for gutting the federal workforce and dismantling federal agencies that Trump claimed he didn't know anything about. I'm Donna Warder.
This is VOA News. Ukrainian officials said Monday a Russian attack on Ukraine's northeast city of Sumy killed 11 people and injured at least 89. The attack followed a massive Russian bombardment of Ukraine's power infrastructure earlier Sunday and followed the news that the United States has finally relented to Ukraine's request for use of its weapons on targets inside Russia. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
President Joe Biden has authorized Ukraine to use U.S.-supplied missiles to strike deeper into Russia, easing limitations on the long range weapons as Russia deploys thousands of North Korean troops to reinforce its border and reclaim hundreds of miles of territory seized by Ukrainian forces, according to a U.S. official and three other people familiar with the matter. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky's reaction Sunday was notably restrained. Strikes are not made with words, he said during his nightly video address. Such things are not announced. The missiles will speak for themselves. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
After a long legal battle, dozens of Hong Kong pro-democracy activists will be sentenced later this week in a years-long subversion trial under a Chinese-imposed national security law, which could see those convicted face jail terms ranging from several years to life in prison. Reuters correspondent Sayakar Jasny reports.
Democrats in Hong Kong once enjoyed wide-ranging freedoms under a one-country, two-systems formula after Britain handed the city back to Chinese rule in 1997. But in 2020, a year after pro-democracy protests swept the city, China imposed a national security law under which Democrats were charged with conspiracy to subvert the state power for organizing and taking part in an unofficial primary election in July 2020. Over 600,000 people voted in that poll. It was seen as a symbolic protest against the national security law, as participants defied warnings from officials that the vote could be illegal. Reuters has spoken to lawyers and relatives of half a dozen defendants, and they say the convictions have quieted some of the most popular and determined pro-democratic voices.
That was Reuters correspondent Sayakar Jasny reporting. The Philippines and the United States Monday signed a military intelligence sharing deal and a further deepening of defense ties between the two nations facing common security challenges in the region. Visiting U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin signed the agreement with his Philippines counterpart Gilberto Teodoro at Manila's military headquarters, where both officials also broke ground for a combined coordination center that will facilitate collaboration between their armed forces.
This center will enable real-time information sharing for a common operating picture. It will help boost interoperability for many, many years to come.
Philippines Defense Secretary Teodoro called the U.S. presence in the Indo-Pacific essential for maintaining peace and stability in the region. That wraps up this update, but the world and the news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website. I'm Jeff Custer, VOA News.
Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
As you can recall, Mr. Sonko, Usman Sonko, is a firebrand politician. And I can tell you that he swept all the votes in major cities, even in the rural areas. In Dhaka, which is Dhaka has one of the biggest electorate here, but he swept all the polls here.
That's reporter Alpha Diallo in Dakar on the latest legislative election results from Senegal. Details coming up also. The Global Climate Conference is in its second week with no clear path on financing to battle change. And a Nigerian beauty queen was the first runner-up at the Miss Universe pageant. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Voting took place peacefully across Senegal on Sunday. Roughly 7.3 million registered voters elected 165 members of parliament for five-year terms. Observers indicate the peaceful vote is a testament to a long democratic tradition in Senegal, widely seen as a stable outlier in a region plagued by coup d'etats. For the latest in yesterday's legislative election results, I talked to reporter Alpha Diallo in Dakar.
Yeah, Senegal has once again proven its democratic maturity during yesterday's legislative elections. Voting went very well. The polling stations opened on time, 8 a.m., and closed also at 6 p.m.
Very good. So the country's National Election Commission, SENA, has not officially announced the outcome, but Senegal's ruling party, PASTEF, is claiming a decisive victory in Sunday's legislative elections, securing a mandate for its reform agenda. So tell us about the outcome of the polls so far.
A very clear landslide victory for the ruling PASTEF party led by Prime Minister Usman Sonko. And this also marks a very pivotal moment in the country's political history. As you can recall, Mr. Sonko, Usman Sonko, is a firebrand politician. And I can tell you that he swept all the votes in major cities, even in the rural areas. In Dhaka, which is Dhaka has one of the biggest electorates here, but he swept all the polls here. But it is clear now that Mr. Usman Sonko is leading with a landslide victory, and those analysts are saying that his party, which is PASTEF's party, is tipped to maybe get about 119. Parliamentary seat out of the 165 parliamentary seat.
So, Alpha, lastly, let's talk about the opposition. Former President Macky Sall, leading an opposition group from abroad, former Prime Minister and presidential runner-up Amadou Ba, and Dakar Mayor Bartholomew Diaz. Any statements from them? Because they are actually saying that the government of Domam Faye is a government of inaction, amateurism, and a desire to settle scores with the previous administration.
Yes, they have been saying so many things. They have said so many bad things about Mr. Sonko, about Bassirou Diomaye Faye, that they are inexperienced, they cannot handle the country. But what makes this achievement even more remarkable is the reaction from the political, that is, opposition, like former Prime Minister Amadou Ba, the mayor of Dakar, Bartholomew Diaz, and even President Macky Sall himself, who graciously recognized the outcome of the elections, thereby reflecting a deep respect for the country's democratic value. So it is very clear now they have seen that Mr. Sonko is a very, formidable politician. And this is also very clear. This will also give the government, chance to start their reforms.
And lastly, Alpha, when is the country's National Election Commission officially going to announce the outcome?
Now, the SENA, which is the National Election Commission, will announce the final results either within 24 hours. That would be tomorrow or by Wednesday.
Reporter Alpha Jallo in Dakar. He talked to me from Senegal's capital, Dakar. The Global Climate Change Conference, COP29, entered its final week today in Azerbaijan with no clear path on an agreement for financing to battle climate change. Less developed regions, including Africa, are asking richer countries to provide more money so they can protect their countries against extreme weather and transition to renewable energy systems. Darren Taylor reports.
The delegates at COP29 widely agree that the world's poorest countries need trillions of dollars to cope with climate-related disasters and build clean energy capacity. They agree that rich industrialized countries are most responsible for the carbon fuel emissions causing the Earth to get hotter. But so far, there's no agreement on specific amounts of funding and which countries should pay up. South African Environment Minister Dion George is one of the continent's negotiators. He spoke to reporters on the sidelines of the annual meeting.
We need honest conversations. You know, you either want to have a transition or you don't. And if you're a developed economy country, well, you had the benefit of burning coal for hundreds of years. You know, we're not going to actually do that. So, you know, where is the justice in that? And how do you actually then look at the financial implications of that? So we're very clear. We're very united in terms of this is what it is that we want to achieve. It's not about ganging up on developed economy countries, but it's basically saying, look, you did make specific promises. You have committed to doing certain things. Now do what you say you will do. And if you're not going to do it, then say so. And we are able to then make a plan as best we can because we know what needs to be done.
Some delegates at COP29 aren't optimistic. They say the biggest polluters have in the past agreed to measures to stop global warming, but not implemented them. Speaking during a United Nations webinar on Saturday, the UN Special Rapporteur on Climate Change and Human Rights, Elisa Morguera, said it's been difficult to get wealthy countries to live up to their commitments.
We had some initial language that was agreed, for instance, of moving away from fossil fuels. But in fact, all the data showing that many countries are increasing their fossil fuel extractions. There's been commitment around reducing and, in fact, eliminating subsidies to fossil fuel industries, and that is also not the case. And this is one of the big issues underlying the question of finance. There is significant amounts of money available, but they're still going into the causes of climate change as opposed to the solutions.
Wealthy nations pledged in 2009 to provide $100 billion a year in climate funds to developing nations starting in 2020, a deadline that later was pushed to 2025. That goal was met and slightly exceeded in 2022, according to data from the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. Diplomats and activists spent last week making speeches and conferring in the background on the need for ambitious global action. Negotiations are expected to ramp up this week to reach agreement by the end of COP29 on Friday. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Head of State of the Southern African Development Community Regional Bloc, SADC, are due to meet this week in Zimbabwe's capital, Harare, on post-election violence in neighboring Mozambique, where the political opposition is disputing poll results. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
Mozambique has been rocked by violence following October 9 elections, with police accused of killing about 30 protesters, according to civil society organizations. Then, Amnesty International says the crackdown on human rights by the government led by the winning Frelimo party continues. Speaking to VOA Friday from her base in Johannesburg, Amnesty International Deputy Regional Director for East and Southern Africa, Kanyo Farise, urged Southern African Development Community, or SADC, leaders to urge an end to post-election violence in Mozambique when they meet in Harare.
The situation in Mozambique gets worse every day as the death toll spirals, yet SADC has remained shockingly silent. Regardless of the outcome of the election, SADC must take a strong stand against the assault on the right to protest and the killing of protesters. SADC has been painfully slow to respond to Mozambique's crisis. The bloc must forcefully speak out now against the ongoing violations of human rights by Mozambican security forces and put human rights and accountability at the center of its upcoming summit in Harare.
Zimbabwe, which holds the rotating chairmanship of the 16-nation bloc, has called for a meeting to look at the post-election violence in Mozambique, where Venancio Mondlane, leader of the opposition Podemos party, is disputing that Frelimo's Daniel Chapo won the presidential election. Jennifer Muswere, Zimbabwe's information minister, spoke to reporters in Harare.
The nation is informed that an extraordinary summit of SADC heads of state and government is scheduled to be held in Harare, primarily to address emerging issues of regional significance. The summit is also expected to be briefed on political events in the region, including the recent elections in Mozambique and Botswana, and the upcoming polls in Namibia.
Adriano Nuvunga, the director of the Center for Democracy and Human Rights in Mozambique, sums up the mood in his country.
We have seen several lives lost in the past due to post-election violence. Now, in these elections, the difference is that the magnitude and the duration of the incidents is unprecedented. It is nationwide violence led by the young people. The people feel that the results announced favoring Frelimo did not reflect the will of the people expressed at the polls. In the past 3 days, everything is paralyzed. The ports are paralyzed, corridors, borders are paralyzed, which is affecting not only Mozambique, but neighboring countries that depend on Mozambique to access to sea and ports. So this makes it a regional crisis, not only a domestic crisis.
Nuvunga says the region must be concerned by developments in Mozambique.
But SADC is not really well positioned to address this problem, mainly because its leaders, the president of Tanzania, president of Zimbabwe, president of South Africa, they have already commended Frelimo and its candidate as the winners. So they have taken sides long time ago, even before the elections were pronounced by the Constitutional Council, which compromises the integrity of the institution to lead the way forward in this matter. So SADC will meet, SADC will discuss, but the trust in SADC is not that big.
Now all eyes are on the upcoming meeting on whether it will come up with a solution to the violence in Mozambique. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
Three African beauty queens, namely Chadima Adetshina, Logina Sala, and Sakil Dube, finished in the top 30 of the 2024 Miss Universe pageant, which has over 120 women from different parts of the world competing for the crown. Adetshina, a Nigerian beauty queen, was the first runner-up of the pageant. She lost the crown to Victoria Kajir Telvig, a Danish model. 15 other African beauty queens also participated in the 2024 Miss Universe. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com, and there you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. And of course, we'd love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is +1-202-258-3076. Every Wednesdays, we'll be sharing our listeners' comments on Africa News Tonight. Botswana's new government has decided against hosting a UN conference for landlocked developing countries that was planned for next month. The administration that came into power following elections on October 30 says it found the state coffers almost empty, so there's no budget to host a meeting that would have attracted 6,000 delegates from around the world.
In a statement, newly appointed Minister of International Relations Penyo Butale said Botswana can't afford to host the meeting. The previous government had committed to hosting the third UN meeting of developing landlord countries, which has 32 member states and is now looking for a new host. Vice President Ndaba Haolate, who is also the Minister of Finance, told the media Thursday the country's financial situation is dire. He says the financial situation is worse than we expected. Our government coffers are almost dry. Haolate says he has even told the president that government officials should take salary cuts. A coalition of opposition parties, the Umbrella for Democratic Change, led by President Duma Woko, ousted the Botswana Democratic Party, which had led the country since independence in 1966. Dumisani Nyathi is an economist based at the National University of Science and Technology in neighboring Zimbabwe. He says it was logical for the new government to withdraw from hosting, considering the state of the economy.
Hosting such conferences of such big magnitudes involves a lot of cost, a lot of direct cost and indirect cost that governments, the hosting government, has got to incur. So the move that has been taken by the new government of Botswana, I would applaud it because they are more focused in growing the economy, rebasing the economy, re-kickstarting the economy. And part of the re-kickstarting of the economy is to cut unnecessary spending.
Botswana's economy has slowed due to reduced global demand for diamonds. The new administration also accuses the previous leadership of plundering public coffers. Nyathi says the El Nino-induced drought has made the situation worse for southern African countries.
African governments are under siege, especially when you look at Botswana, which is closer to us in Zimbabwe. It also had some challenges with the El Nino effect. So it means that most of our governments, they are actually financing food security to cushion their population so that they won't feel the effects of the El Nino drought.
The meeting's agenda was expected to include challenges facing landlocked countries, in particular increased geopolitical conflicts that have affected global trade. For VOA, this is Mkondisi Dube in Gaborone, Botswana.
Some of U.S. President-elect Donald Trump's cabinet picks are being described as controversial in both Democratic and Republican circles. Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson reminded critics Sunday that the American people voted to shake up the status quo, and that's what this new cabinet officials, if confirmed, will be tasked with doing. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias has the story.
As Democrats come to terms with their general election losses, they are also searching for answers to explain their defeat. The White House has pushed back on the notion that President Joe Biden's bid for re-election and his hesitancy to withdraw from the presidential race earlier hurt Vice President Kamala Harris's chances of winning. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre.
When he made that decision to hand over the torch, pass the torch to the vice president, he believed it was the right decision to make at that time.
Harris's inability to set herself apart from Biden's economic policies hurt her presidential bid the most, analysts say. David Greenberg is a professor of history at Rutgers University. He spoke via Skype.
The popular perception was that he had not been a good steward of the economy, which, you know, as I said, mostly stemmed from the sharp inflation of his first 2 years in office. And I think those were very difficult obstacles for Harris to overcome.
On the campaign trail, great attention was paid to abortion rights. But women didn't vote for Harris on that issue at the rate Democrats had hoped for. Democratic strategist Julie Roginski spoke to VOA via Skype.
There were a lot of states that had a referenda on the ballot to codify reproductive rights, so people were able to vote for that and at the same time vote for Trump.
Democratic strategist Julie Roginski says that beyond assessing this election cycle's mishaps, The Democratic Party needs to fix what she calls a longstanding structural problem.
We have a record to be proud of, and yet we don't know how to communicate it. We don't come across as authentic.
Fresh blood could prove re-energizing, says John Lappe, an associate professor of political science at Plymouth State University. He was interviewed via Skype.
They need new leadership that is younger and more in tune with conditions now, and definitely more in tune with the working class.
Since Republicans hold just a slim majority in Congress, Lappe expects Democrats will be able to push back on policies they disagree with while they await their next shot in the 2026 midterm elections. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
And in our sports roundup, we have our VOA sports analyst, Mokbil Yabaro, in studio. Welcome to African News Tonight, Mokbil.
Thanks for having me, Yehaze.
The much-hyped Jake Paul versus Iron Mike Tyson fight happened over the weekend. Did the fight live up to the hype?
Absolutely not, Yehaze. I believe I speak for a ton of us that went into it with some glimpse or glimmer of hope that we may have seen some flashes of the true Iron Mike Tyson. But at his age, at 58, where he's facing Jake Paul at the prime of his, you know, athleticism at 27, 31-year gap, it really showcased. And I also believe, you know, his team really wasn't mentioning it, but after that initial time that they were supposed to fight, Mike had a health scare, was hospitalized. He came back from that and never really truly returned to even how he looked prior to that hospitalization. That could have been a huge reason. We just saw 8 rounds of Jake kind of just tapping away at him and really also looking like he really didn't want to also hurt this 50 or 58-year-old man, unfortunately. But on the flip side, what we did see was we highlighted a lot of the undercards, right? Mm-hmm. We've seen Katie Taylor versus Amanda Serrano, probably the best fight of the night.
The best.
You know, two women that really were going in. It was such a brutal fight, man. That could have went either way. A ton of people thought that Serrano maybe should have got the nod, but unfortunately for her, she did not. But she has nothing to be ashamed of. Keep her head up. It was a phenomenal fight. Mario Barrios also beats and keeps his they ended up in a draw, actually. Mario Barrios and Abel Ramos ended up in a split draw. But with the split draw, what happens is the champion keeps his belts. Now, I don't know if he wants to fight him again. There was no rematch clause in there. That's pretty much it for the initial boxing.
So, keeping it in the fight game, UFC's 309's main event was John Bones Jones versus Stechi Miocic. Did anything unexpected happen?
No, not really. You got the 38-year-old John Jones going up against a 42-year-old Stipe Miocic. Stipe having been one of the greatest heavyweights in that division. John Jones being one of the greatest of all time, coming up from light heavyweight to heavyweight. Really clinical performance by him, ending it with a spinning leg kick to the ribs. It was all John Jones.
Ouch.
Very painful.
And lastly, the story of the NBA has to be the Cleveland Cavaliers blazing undefeated start to the season. Tell us more.
Yes, they are 15-0. In the Eastern Conference, they are at the top. If we're looking at some of the teams that they have faced and defeated already this season, they've beat the Toronto Raptors, the Detroit Pistons, the Wizards, the Knicks, the Lakers. That's a big one. They beat the Bucks twice. They've beat the Pelicans, the Warriors, and the Nets. So it has not been an easy couple of weeks for them for the beginning of the season, but to see that they are still undefeated shows me that this team is going to be a problem for the season.
VOA sports analyst Mokbil Yabaro, thank you for your input. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Al Santos, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.